Hey guys, it's Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's podcast is a conversation with a friend of mine named Mark Montini. Mark is the CEO and founder of a company called Promio.com. Promio is an all-in-one local marketing system that guarantees more revenue in 90 days or less. It's geared towards small business. And so his conversation, his discussion is so applicable to us and what we're all going through because we're an industry of small business. And so he understands it. He's also dabbled with printing and brokering of print. So he comes from this world. I was really, really lucky to have Mark be a keynote speaker at our Think MSP Summit this past October. And to say that he knocked it out of the park would be an understatement. He is a really, really thoughtful guy. He's very prepared. He has a passion for serving others that is unparalleled. He really gets it. Certainly, he's probably made some dough along the way, but that's just a byproduct of the way he has served others and continues to do that. He has an aspiration to continue to lead in the sphere of small business, and my discussion with him was nothing short of fascinating. So without further ado, I am going to let you listen in to an excerpt of my discussion with him, and please remember that this podcast was sponsored by Conduit Incorporated, where we channel content and connections. So have a listen to my conversation with Mark and enjoy. So you said you've been traveling. Did the deal get done? Did your whole, did that all come?
Well, in theory, yes. We're just waiting on our favorite people, the attorneys. So right now it looks like we're going to actually officially close next week, but the close date will be effective 10/31, which is what we were after. But I guess, you know, lawyers' kids need to eat too, so they're just going to continue putting together the extra hours to make sure that they've got plenty of food on the table for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. You know, they struggle. It's a tough existence. I hear you.
Yeah, that is.
Well, and so where do you go from here? What's next?
Well, you know, obviously, I've got kind of the end of a story to tell, and I'm very excited about being able to tell that story in multiple different formats. I guess in the big picture, it's just the end of another chapter, but it's kind of nice to have those stories go from beginning to end. And, you know, I learned a lot along the way, and I'm getting very excited as I kind of take notes and think back of various lessons that, you know, I've learned that I'd love to share and things maybe I'd have done a little bit differently, but a lot of value in how the last sort of 5.5 years has evolved for me. So I'm very excited about that opportunity working with, you know, entrepreneurs or other people who are looking to take kind of the same journey I am, you know, specifically a lot of the people at the conference that you did, the Think MSP conference, you know, great folks that are in an industry and saying, hey, how do we evolve? How do we stay out front? And I've been there a little bit and might have a few things to help them along the way. And then, of course, you know, continuing to focus on growing the business that acquired mine and playing my part in making that a successful acquisition.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, it is. That's pretty nice to be able to have a new chapter, if you will. You know, I thought the event was great. I thought you did. You know, I've told you that already, but I mean, I think that people really really gravitated to your message, and I thought that, you know, you were really prepared, and that shows a lot of respect. You know, too often in this world, we don't do that. It's funny. I kind of took a cue from you. I spoke in Indianapolis yesterday, and one of my clients had all their clients in, and I kind of took a page from you in that, you know, I a lot of times you can just kind of, it's old hat, and you can go off the cuff. And I thought, you know, preparation is the key. It's like Bobby Knight, you know, the old basketball coach, used to say that the will to prepare to win is greater than the will to win. And I just felt like you showed our audience so much respect by being really well prepared, and so it wasn't just the message. I mean, obviously the message was good too, but I can't tell you how much I appreciated that. I thought it was great.
Well, I appreciated the opportunity and I enjoyed it. I mean, it was an awesome audience, and as you and I talked about, I think the format that you use is the right format, especially for the level of people that you had in the room. I mean, they're clearly go-getters, people that don't have a lot of time to spare, you know, much like you and me. And if they're going to invest 2 or 3 days sit in a conference room, they want actionable information. Of course, a little rah-rah is good, but they want actionable information that they can walk out and get an ROI on the 3-day investment they made. And I love working with people who have that mindset. And I think you've built the format to allow that to take place, both from a speaker's perspective as well as from an attendee's perspective. So it was good. I appreciate the compliments, but it was as much the audience as the format as it was me. I just got to get up there and share a little bit about what I've done and love the questions and the give and take that we had during and after the presentation. I thought it was great.
I think that, you know, the other big deal was that, and how do I say this? You know, I think that we live in a day and age when the internet is all remarkable. It's all the most fascinating. It's either the most outrageous or, you know, and so what happens is, if I want to listen to Seth Godin speak or Kevin Spacey speak, you know, all I have to do is YouTube them. And,
yeah,
you know, a lot of these conferences today will get these speakers and you know, they get some big name speakers. And it's funny. I mean, the companies might spend $50,000 to $100,000 on these people, and you're thinking to yourself, well, it's really not a competitive advantage. It's not, you know, I can probably YouTube their TED Talk in about a week's time. So, you know, I think there's a lot of value to finding people who are truly thoughtful, and in some respects, going through it. I think that's the cool thing, that you were literally in the midst of selling a company and closing a deal, and you've been involved in the printing industry and campaign management and the like. And it's kind of like, well, wait a minute, you know, he's from here and he's got some thought, and rather than listen to somebody say, look, whatever they say is the gospel, you know, it's good opinion. That's what I kind of did yesterday. And so I think that's, it's just we're in a different time when people demand a little bit more intimacy, don't you think?
Oh, I agree. And I think there's two things. Number one, time is the premium now. So that's a lesson we all learn when we market and when we sell, is people just don't like to waste their time. And so they're very particular and have very high standards with how they invest their time. And then secondly, we're in a very niche world where I have the ability to access almost any content whenever, wherever I want to. And I think what you've done with Think MSP is you really serve that niche, like you were saying. That's not content that they can access anywhere at any time. It's unique content to that environment, and it's content that's driven not only by the speaker, but it's content that's driven by the attendee.
Right.
And you'll never be able to replicate that online. And like you said, yeah, I mean, I can pay $89 and watch a live streaming presentation by the big names if I want that, or I can YouTube it and watch it after the fact. But that give and take with 30 or 50 or 80 people who are right now going through the same struggles that I'm going through, making the same decisions I'm making, having the same conversations I'm having, you just can't replicate that. And I think the ability for Think MSP to be able to do that is really what is the brilliance behind it. And frankly, why you have so many of those people coming back year after year. I was amazed when I talked to them how many of them invested 3-4 in a row, and they continue to come back, because a lot of the big conferences that I go to, when you talk to the attendees, we go for 1 or 2 years, and then what you begin to realize is all we're doing is recycling the same content with different speakers.
Right.
And it loses its value, and that clearly is not the case with what you've done there.
Well, I appreciate it. It was good. I think that's in general, it's not so much the venue as the people that we've been able to connect with, and I think it's a lot. It's where you and I are probably cut from the same cloth. That while you know you've built businesses that have scaled to a certain level, the reality is you do the stuff that doesn't scale, you know. And I think that the world is so noisy. You know, we just got done with this godforsaken election, and I don't know about you, but I mean, it exhausted me.
Is it over?
The election?
Yeah, did it end? All the drama's still out there. I thought it was still going on.
That's true. Maybe it's not over. You never know. It sounds like some people aren't going to let it go. But, you know, I was talking to these people yesterday, and regardless of where you fall on this thing, it was kind of compelling if you can pull yourself back and look at the business side of things, the analogy of it, that one of them was able to connect with a certain group. Just like you were talking about our little event, you know, Trump essentially connected with some group of people. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a part of that group or not. He did, while she probably did not. And I thought it was really, really compelling because in this age of big data. Now, it's funny, I went into my hotel room the other night, and he did use kind of a guru of data. And kid was from Kansas, and he was pounding data, but he found out where they should be investing their time and their money. Now, the way they did it was with grassroots stuff. So it wasn't, hey, here's data replacing human interaction and the sincerity of live engagement. It was enforcing that. It was elevating that. And so I thought it was interesting because that's a lesson for maybe all of us, that there's so much noise out there that maybe we're going back to a simpler time. Do you feel that?
I do. And it's funny that you use the election, and I'll give the same little preface that you gave, disclaimer, that it doesn't make a difference which side you're on or who you like, because inevitably, as tense and stressful as was, people get offended if you say something good or bad about either one. But
right.
You may remember one of the points I made at Think MSP was, vision is a new differentiator.
Right.
And as I'm sort of thinking through the story that I'm telling about, the business venture that I'm just about to wrap up, one of the things that really came to the forefront to me is that when I succeeded best, the periods of time when I was most successful in that venture is when there was absolute clarity around the big picture vision we had for the company. And when we faltered, it's when we lost that clarity, or I failed to communicate it to the people who needed to buy into that. Mm-hmm. And when I extended that, thinking about the presidential election, to me, you had the framework being laid by guys like the guy in Kansas you mentioned, which were doing all the data crunching. But what I thought Donald Trump did ultimately that probably put him over the top was that ability to cast that large vision that got people excited, even though it may not have been tangible. And as I thought about the election, I really couldn't tell you what Hillary Clinton's vision was.
Right.
Obviously, a smart lady, lots of experience, I'm sure had pages and pages and pages of policy outlines of what she would do, but I couldn't remember definitively what was the big thing she was going to do. And Donald Trump, all he basically talked about is, we're going to make America great again.
Right.
He got distracted by all the little things he said, but there was a lot of clarity around his vision. And I really do think that drove a lot of those people that were on the fence, or people who might not have voted, but ultimately said, yeah, let's go out and do it. And the line that I use to describe that all the time is, you want people to say, I'm not quite sure what it is, but I have to have it. Or I'm not quite sure what it is, but I have to buy it. And that really is power of vision, and I think there's something to be said there that Donald Trump in a lot of ways out-visioned Hillary Clinton, and the rest of the world, the media and a lot of others, got caught up in the details of what he was talking about, but the people who made the difference got excited about the big picture vision, and that ultimately kind of pushed him over the top. That's my theory anyway, which I think aligns kind of to what you were saying.
Yeah, I think so, right? I mean, it goes hand in hand. If you've got that big picture and you can communicate it, and if you can paint the picture, whether it's verbally or however you do it, but if people can buy into it and they can see it, or they can own it, or they can feel it or live it. I think there's a lot of people who probably, certainly they all talked about, well, he tapped into some emotions. And you're right. I think it all started with that. And then, he brought it home with, he went to the, he had these events, which were like tens of thousands of people were going. He was like a rock star.
Yeah, yep.
Which was, I thought was fascinating in this day and age. He still does this. He did, he's obviously been famous for the social. But it spoke to here was a businessman, and boy, he used business tactics. He used marketing tactics, and he engaged. And so I know it's hard. You're right. There's too much emotion around it. It may be too soon, but when people pull back and look at it and analyze, do the diagnosis of this thing, regardless of where they feel emotionally, they can look at this and go, wow, there's some lessons. And I do fear that, Mark. I fear that there's just so much noise in the world. And golly, marketers in general, I told these people yesterday, I said, if my wife sends me an email, the open rate on that, at least on most days, is 100%, right? And if the content within that email is my kids, a picture of my kids, then the click rate's 100%. And ultimately, wouldn't you love to have those kind of relationships with the marketplace that, that would be their nirvana? And yet, on the other side of the scale, I opened up my phone and I said to the group, I said, how many emails do you think I can delete in 10 seconds? And it was like 18. And yet we still have this community of marketers that just browbeats us with these emails. And it feels like there's a little bit of noise. Do you see that changing going forward, that people are going to wise up and realize that they've got to connect on a more unscalable nature?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, at the end of the day, I think there's two reasons driving that, shoot and pray approach to marketing, or spray and pray, as they say. One is that's the easy way to do it. So for a lot of businesses out there, they're validated when they send an email to a list of 20,000 people, because that makes them feel real. They mistakenly believe that 20,000 people now are engaged with their brand. And it's easy, with constant contact and MailChimp and other solutions like that, 15, 20 minutes, you can get it out and you feel good and you sleep better that night. The other thing is they just don't take the time to really think through what else could I be doing, because they're so caught up in the day-to-day of running their business, and they just don't have that 2 or 3 hours a week to sit down and say, is this really the right approach? And so they opt to that, let's just get it done. But yeah, I think so. And in the marketing world, just like in the sales world, revenue is going to weed those people out. It's only a matter of time until their businesses begin to fail, and it forces them to take those 3 and 4 and 5 hours to say, how do I do this a little more personally and a little more strategically? And that's the fundamental principle that I think is changing in marketing, is that the consumers drive marketing now. Guys like me, who have built our lives showing consumers how to buy, are having to come to grips with the fact that consumers are now telling us how to market. And that's a hard mindset shift to make for some people. Because consumers now have the ability, like you deleting 18 emails in 10 seconds, they can push the mute button on me easier than they ever have before. And I have to be cognizant of that and respectful of that and say, why are you pushing the mute button? Not saying, well, maybe if I send 15 more emails, one will sneak through your mute button. I need to say, why did you hit your mute button 14 times, and what can I do to actually get you to turn the volume up when you get an email from me. And so maybe it's less, more personal, more relevant content, kind of like some of the stuff, you know, you do at Canvas and other stuff. Mm-hmm. How do I make that content more relevant and more valuable so I can actually get through those filters?
Yeah. What about the next generation? I mean, I think it was you that said that Xers and millennials are working harder than ever to stay anonymous. And so how do you think it's, you know, because I think they're a little, I mean, they probably, it might be human nature to crave a more sincere connection. You know, business may be, hey, I want the money and I want to scale this right now, but maybe there's this backlash with these generations. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And every generation has good and bad, and it's cyclical in some way. But you know, when you look at the millennials and you look at Gen X, the fight to remain anonymous longer is driven by a lot of things. But when it comes to information, what it really means is I now have the ability to go find my own information. I don't need you to provide it to me anymore and interrupt my day or interrupt my stream of consciousness to show me what you think I should be looking at. I have the ability in 30 seconds to go find everything I want to look at. Mm-hmm. And that really is the challenge and why they stay anonymous, because they know as soon as you know who they are, you're going to start interrupting their day, telling them what you think is important to them, and why would they spend their time filtering through that when they can very easily go find what's important to them at the moment. From the relationship side, though, I agree. If we can provide the type of content that they say, yeah, you know, that is what I'm looking for, that's when you establish the relationship. And I do believe that we're going to see a shift where there is a stronger desire to have meaningful relationships. And I heard a speaker the other day, and he made me laugh. He was talking about millennials or maybe Gen Z. I'm not sure which one. But he said, my son, he actually thinks he has 1,200 friends. He said, if you asked him, he would say, I have 1,200 friends. He said he doesn't realize he doesn't have any friends.
Right.
And I think eventually that epiphany will hit and people will say, yeah, you know what, I do want to crave that relationship again. And whether that's two generations from now or, you know, later in this generation, I don't know. But it's all cyclical. And the people who can build those relationships that are meaningful by providing that kind of relevant information are the ones that I think are ultimately going to win in the long run.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you about printers and specifically what they can do. I mean, they have an intimate tool, but before I do that, you know, give me the Montini 411. You know, how did you get started in business and what, you know, give me the chronology that is Mark.
Yeah, so really I'm a marketer who has a love for technology and a desire to innovate. And so most of my career has been built around marketing. I really kind of have a knack and a passion for building brands. And so early in my career, I went down the traditional agency/consultant path where I would be brought in by companies to help them craft not only what their brand is, but then how to message and communicate that brand out to potential customers. And I absolutely love the work, but my love for technology really led me to say, okay, there's got to be an easier way to do some of this stuff, because what technology allows us to do is take those things that are predictable or redundant out of our life or make them more efficient. And there were so many things that I was doing over and over as a marketer. I said, geez, you know what? I could serve my clients better. I could better utilize my time so I can focus on the higher value things if I could just find a way to automate through technology all of these lower value things that I have to do. And I spent about 3 or 4 years working with technology companies trying to find the right partnership or the right mashup of different solutions to do that. And really never was successful with that. And finally, I almost literally remember the day sitting in my office where I kind of threw my hands up in the air and said, geez, you know, it can't be that hard to build this technology. And so I started, hired my first developer, frustrated him to no end because I had no idea how to develop applications and software, and worked with him for about 4 or 5 years, built a pretty good team, both onshore and offshore over the years. And it kind of spiraled from there to the point where now I'm probably still a marketer with a passion for brand and a passion for customer journey and customer success, but I'm really more of a technology entrepreneur who happens to have focused my ventures on marketing. Specifically, this most recent venture, the one that I talked to you a little bit about prior to the conference, I partnered with a friend of mine who was a print distributor, and he and I had a relationship for many years where I would build out the marketing programs for clients, and he and his team would execute them, especially on the print side. And we decided that we'd gotten enough traction, we wanted to go ahead and come together and formalize it, and so we started the company that's now Promio, and started building out a platform to be able to do it a little more efficiently. And about 2.5 years ago, he had a great opportunity to grow his traditional business. And I felt like we had a very exciting opportunity with Promio. And so, we parted ways mutually. I bought him out, and we really started down the path of developing really the first and only online paid advertising platform designed specifically for very small businesses, those businesses with less than $2 million in revenue. And it sort of completed the transition from a guy who was your traditional kind of Madison Avenue brand marketer who transitioned into direct marketing, lots of ink and lots of paper in what I did for many years, used technology to do it more efficiently, and then eventually found a way to basically make technology the core of everything that I did, and that's really what led to where I am today.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. Yeah, and I lived in the world where, in the dot-com world where technology obviously was changing and it came at us in an abrupt way, they become afraid, and they're afraid of the change. So, what do you tell people about that? Because there's some people who look at it and they go, gosh, the jobs are gone. And, I looked at some jobs report. It said 65% of the jobs when my kids come of age are they don't even exist. And you've probably got another round of technology with robotics coming. So, but that doesn't necessarily mean that people won't have opportunity. It's just a matter of whether or not they educate themselves in the right way. And in the short term, you don't necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater. So, have you seen that? I mean, you've seen where technology creates opportunity, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Opportunity in the sense of new industries and new markets and new ways of thinking, but also opportunity within old, what we would call traditional business.
Right.
It's interesting. You've probably seen the same studies I have, the Forrester and the Gartner studies, that predict things like the chief marketing officer of Fortune 500 companies will have a larger technology budget in 5 years than the chief technology officer at that same company, and so it just moves around and it creates a lot of different and exciting opportunities for me, because you have people who maybe committed to a career path for 20 years and all of a sudden they start to see their job or their role or their duty really being put in a vice, and to a certain extent it's very clear it's going to be eliminated. That can be scary, and I understand that. But at the same point in time, if you're able to look up even for a second above that fear, you realize, wow, I have a skill set that is unique because of my 20 years of experience, and if I can just embrace the fact that I might have to do it a little differently, I can become even more valuable and have an opportunity to have a greater impact if I can leverage the technology that's coming out there and use my experience as a traditional proprietor of this craft and use technology to say, how do I do it better? So, yeah, I mean, obviously new industries, new jobs, moving much more quickly, and it intimidates people, people can be fearful. I understand that. But as they say, innovate or die. If you're not innovating, if you're standing still, you're losing ground. And people have to just embrace that. And as scary as it may be, it's exciting as it all get out.
Yeah, and I think that's on some level, it's our responsibility. If you go back to what you were talking about at our event, which was your little S curve, and I talk about it in terms of like the top of the funnel, and you look at the printing industry as an example, and any B2B environment, right? They're all using salespeople at the top of the funnel. The industrial age recipe is all about knocking on doors. I mean, we're still talking about cold calling. And not that hearing somebody's voice is not a bad thing, but you're probably not going to get through and you're probably not going to get a return call. But the technology, and I'm, you know, assuming that a lot of what you do and we have done is in the top of that funnel or the top of that S curve, because it's still at some point human interaction takes place. It just takes place at the most critical time, you know, when, especially in the B2B environment, when the check is being cut, and those people better be pretty sophisticated people. But everything you've done in the top of the funnel, and maybe technology has reached them, but they've found you. And so technology, if it's embraced, may in fact enable this human connection, this deeper connection that they're so used to. Don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I blew through something a couple seconds ago, and I want to put a spotlight on it because it's critical. The way that I always viewed technology. So when I was a true marketer, and that's what I did, is I got my fingers dirty working with people on how to market their business. I always viewed technology as a tool that I could use to free up more of my time to focus on the highest return activities that I could undertake for our customers. Because the reality of business, the reality of any job, is that there's certain things you have to do to make the wheels spin, the day-to-day tasks, the grunt work, as they say. But if I can eliminate 50% of my grunt work, what I've just done is I freed up all of that time to really do things that have a greater impact for me personally, for the company that I work for my family. And that's what technology allows us to do. And you see the same thing that's happening in sales, is that you have so many salespeople who are beaten down and tired because they're having to do the grind, knocking on all these doors and making all of these phone calls. And if we begin to embrace the fact that if we market correctly, consumers will find us, we can remove a lot of that work from the salespeople and free them up to do the more rewarding and ultimately more valuable work of shepherding those potential customers into exactly the right solution, and then working with them to grow that solution over time to add even more revenue to the business. So, yeah, I think it's going to change, but I think it is changing, but I think it's an opportunity for people, if they look at it, to say, wow, it can really make the work that I do more meaningful, because the stuff that wears me out, technology can take care of, the internet can take care of in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you, and so, I mean, it's always fun to talk to you because I think that, you know, we do have kind of the same picture of the world, and it's frustrating on my side because when you're dealing with change and you're dealing with tradition and you're dealing with people who have done things a certain way, and, you know, there's a lot of angst, you know, there's a lot of people who just put their head down, and they, while their margins may be shrinking and their volume may be shrinking, you know, they're trying to get to the finish line and they're just going, you know, whatever. But it is, like you said earlier, the power is with the buyer now, and they do need to find you. And I wonder what traditional salespeople can start to do to say, well, okay, that's great, but what are the type of things that I need to be doing so that they find me? You talk about, you know, let's use technology. And part of that is investing in different people, like marketing people and small business, and you deal with small business, a lot of times, especially small B2B, they're not going to invest in that person. And it's so hard for them because they're going, look, I need to keep the machines running. I need to keep doing whatever I'm doing to keep the lights on. And yet it seems like it's a longer play. Are we at a point where you know, they're going to need to wake up to that reality that they're going to need some central marketing piece to the puzzle to align and move towards something else that you said. And that is, you know, maybe it's not so much generating leads. You know, leads almost denotes that we're treating consumers on a kind of an antiseptic way. Maybe it's more an exchange of information. But yeah. But do you see that? I mean, and have you had experience with small business that has committed to that? In fact, I just left a company that is getting there, and I really feel like they're committing to it. But do you see that, and do you see a level of success with them versus the people that are clinging to the traditions?
Yeah, but absolutely we do. And I mean, I'm going to say an absolute statement. There may be an exception or two, but I can't think of them, but I'm still hesitant to say it as an absolute. But maybe there's an exception out there. But every one of our clients and every company that I've worked with over the last 5 to 7 years that has made a true strategic commitment to providing information rather than selling, mm-hmm. to focusing their business processes, whether it be sales, support, marketing, around what the consumer is looking for as opposed to what the company wants to sell, have seen over time an exponential increase in the momentum they have behind their selling and obviously the revenue generation that selling ultimately delivers to their business. The key there is it takes time. And I think that's, in a lot of cases, a challenge. And I'm not talking about years. I mean, I'm talking about you've got to commit to it for 6 to 12 months to really get the flywheel spinning, because it takes time for people to realize you're truly providing valuable information. It's not just a gimmick to try to go get me to buy your thing. So, you know, it takes time. But once you get that flywheel spinning, it becomes a differentiator that really starts to become an ATM, really, for your business and decreases your sales cycle, so you're able to close deals faster, and increases the strength of your relationship, so your customer churn goes down. And by increasing your relationship, it increases the level of trust, so you've got an opportunity to upsell even more within those accounts without doing all of the work. So, mm-hmm. I mean, again, I'm sure there's exceptions, but I can't think of them right now. The companies and the businesses that commit to that approach to marketing for an extended period of time are the ones that I see the most success with when it comes to their marketing.
Yeah, because it always was, you know, even when I was with a big organization, you know, oh, the CMO has got a lifespan of 24 months and, you know, they get 6 months to figure out what they're going to do and a year to implement it and then 6 months to measure it and then they're out. And so, but I still believe that marketing is the cornerstone to success. And I don't mean that in overstepping any other role. I just think culturally as an organization, you say, look, we're committed to the market. We're committed to serving this market. It's the only sustainable way. And you know, there are going to be different recipes to connect with different markets. And one size is not going to fit all. You were talking about this whole niche and technology and the ability to access data allows you to carve those niches so much quicker and then hopefully script those recipes, which could include not only people, but even a more robust group of people than ever before. And that's where, you know, I've got to preach that at the top of the mountain and I've got to continue to find people who get that. And because I think there is, the scary thing is there's crazy opportunity where everybody sees change and they get nervous and like, oh my gosh, the way I did things before was threatened. It's actually the other way around. You know, there's tremendous opportunity. In fact, there's more opportunity for someone to embrace it now. You know, they get that pioneer's advantage, if you will. And so I've got to keep preaching that. Go ahead.
No, I'll just say, you know, the one interesting thing, and again, this is more me being able to reflect on the last 5.5 years and what I've learned. But one of the notes that I've taken is, you know, as I work with these small business owners, what are some of the obstacles that prevent them from going ahead and taking that leap? And one of the things that I've realized is that I'm kind of a serial entrepreneur. So what that means is that, you know, every couple of years, I'm trying something brand new, which means every couple of years, I'm being reminded how clueless I am when I try something new. Mm-hmm. And 4 or 5 years later, I look back and I forget how clueless I was at the time. And you know, every once in a while, there's a reminder, and you're like, geez, when I started this business, I had absolutely no clue what that acronym meant. I had no idea how that worked. But I learned, and I evolved, and I used my strategy to be able to put the pieces together. And there's a part of me that wonders if these business owners, because they maybe have been in the business or in the industry for so long, they've forgotten that it was 25 years ago, they were scared to death to get into the printing business. They were scared to death to send a mass email. They were scared to death to mail piece. And they learned and they figured out how to do it. And I think maybe I have the advantage because I can't seem to stick with one thing for very long as a serial entrepreneur. So I'm reminded every couple of years that, you know what? We all start scared to death. And when you stay with the same business and you do it, you've got to continually innovate. With that comes a little bit of fear. But they're smart people running those businesses, and they're not going to mess it up. But they've got to be willing to say, hey, let's take a little bit of a leap of faith here and go back to day one and have that feeling where we're a bit scared and just know we're going to figure it out.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I you know, not to get too deep and philosophical, but I do think that you know, in this going back to the stupid election, it all the emotion around it, and you know, I heard a minister speak the other day, and not to impart faith in or inject faith into anything, but the reality is, he sits there and he goes, God, I heard about people who were afraid before this election, and they were afraid after this election, and everything was about fear. And he said, you know, the fear shows what we love. It shows what we value. Yep. And it was interesting. I thought it was a really compelling, and that's why I feel like all the noise in, and I talk about it, whether it's a backlash or not, I mean, but maybe we're getting to an answer that is simple on the other side of complex. Maybe it is we're going back to a simpler time. And he was saying, look, I mean, there were people who were afraid of money issues before, and there were people who maybe now they're fearful of losing power. And, you know, they're what he was saying was, gosh, we have a lot of, you know, are those the things that we should be valuing? And of course, he goes on to say, you know, the things that make us united and the things that make us unique is rooted more in being human and in love and the whole deal. And so I do feel, and then he goes on to say, he says, to have faith in that, or anything for that matter, is to kind of let it all go. And he thought, he said something pretty interesting. He says, you need to be comfortable with discomfort. You know, you need to be comfortable. Yeah. And it'll be okay. He was kind of like, it'll be okay. And I thought, well, that's a great business analogy to me. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly where we are. And small business, I mean, they're right in the throes of it, because they're not protected. You know, that's the cool thing. And you've seen that. You know, I believe that it's the lifeblood of our country, and you know, I've been in the big organization, and we know what, you know, government jobs are like, and you know, there's a level of living in the bubble, if you will. When you're mm-hmm. in a small business, you're vulnerable, and that vulnerability is what kind of makes you special.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, getting back to this thing I mentioned to you before, that sort of vision is becoming my passion, because I think it's an underappreciated key to success in business and in life. Mm-hmm. And just that willingness to say, you know what, I don't know how this is going to play out. I don't know exactly what steps I'm going to take or what path I'm going to take, but I know a long way ahead of me, high up on that hill, I know what I'm after, and I'm just going to keep my head down and I'm going to grind. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the challenges in the industry that I work in, when you're in a technology startup is there are definitely peaks and valleys in the early stages, and you've got to keep your team motivated and keep their eye on the big picture, not on the fact that, ooh, we had a bad week or we had a bad month or our cash is running low. And I always talk with our teams when I'm working with them to say, look, the moment you become comfortable and the moment you're not afraid, you should be scared to death because you're about to make a big mistake. Mm-hmm. And because you get complacent. And I always tell my kids, too, you know, never be satisfied. Be happy in your accomplishments, but never be satisfied, because satisfaction leads to laziness. And you know, that's just my mindset. And I know a lot of people disagree, and many people who know my family would say we probably push our kids too hard. But it's just that excitement of, holy cow, you know, we live in a country and in an economy and an economic system where you literally can do anything. And mm-hmm. sometimes I think we sell ourselves short as individuals and as business owners simply because we're too afraid to say, you know what, I'm not going to understand it and I'm going to be scared, but I'm going to figure it out. And that's where I think, you know, the industry and many other industries really need to be, to embrace some of these opportunities that are coming down the pipeline to truly revolutionize their business and take them into the next few decades.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you and I could probably go off on a huge parenting tangent, and we have, and we'll do that over one of our patented lunches. But I agree. I think that culturally we've gotten a little complacent, and you know, maybe we do need some of these shocks to the system to get us going. So let me ask you this before I let you go, we're gonna do a standard lunch here, right? We're gonna get together and solve the world's troubles, right? Let me ask you this. So, because I love this concept of vision, and I think it being addicted to that view of vision is really important. So part of that has to do with your goals. Part of that has to do with, and help me with this, because I see some businesses, printers, who are in fact, they're just lifestyle companies. You know,
yeah.
And when the owner's gone or retires or whatever, that's it. Now, there are a handful of them that are building legacy companies, and maybe those legacies, the one I just left, I mean, he's literally gifting it to his son, and there's new generations of opportunity there. Some might sell, might merge, whatever, but that matters, right? I mean, at some point you have to say, what do you... you know, are you building something for the legacy? Then you can get to the picture, right?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, as they say, start with the end in mind.
Right.
And you know, the end of the day, business is about building value or building an asset for a lot of people. I really am leaning toward, and again, this is a lot of, driven a lot by the reflection that I've had the opportunity to do, is that to me, a vision is about something that's unachievable. I remember many years ago when I was doing work with nonprofits, talking to them about building their brand and crafting their mission. The line that I use is, you want your vision to be so big that when you fail, you still had an impact. And sometimes I think that in the scenarios like you just described, our vision becomes minute to the one thing we want to accomplish, which is, I want to pass on a valuable asset to my children or to my grandchildren. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm not saying you don't want to think that way, but you probably want to do something bigger than that. And that is just that objective, if you will, which is very measurable, is just a piece of something bigger, because the reason you want to pass it on is that you want your kids and your grandkids to have a better life. And if you continue to ask yourself that famous question of why, you eventually reach a point where you get to the heart of what makes you tick as an individual.
Right.
And you know, for me, as I think through it, it's very interesting, and we're getting very philosophical here, and I'm sorry, because I know that's not why you asked the question, but
no, it's
great. For me, it's really about I really have a passion. I have a vision where I want to build my life to be able to serve people. And so personally, that's what gets me excited. When I can see somebody achieve something they didn't feel like they could achieve without, you know, my assistance or without something I was able to provide. And as I look at the business and when I was successful, and this is true in previous businesses as well, I just didn't realize it at the time. I built Tromeo in a lot of ways around, I don't care what our technology is. I don't care what our services are. Every day we need to go home understanding that we did something to make the life of that small business owner better. So when he goes home and sits down at the dinner table, he has less stress, or she has less stress about, how am I going to pay for college? How am I going to make the mortgage payment? And our vision was, that is how we're going to serve those small business owners. And the periods in Promio's history where we were most successful is when we as a company laser focused on that. And that's my vision. I mean, I'm not saying that's the vision everyone should have, but it's not measurable. It's not tangible. There's no metric around it, and I'm never going to achieve it to its fullest. But that's what I really want to focus my attention on with my family and with my companies moving forward and with the way I conduct my day-to-day life, because that's when I think I have the greatest impact. And when I'm comfortable stepping out on a limb, saying the fear that I'm going to have as I attack this is worth it because of the impact the outcome can eventually have.
That's awesome. Well, I'm in, man. We're going to have lunch, and you're going to help me, because I think we're tapping into some new worlds through content, and podcasts and presentations are wonderful and all that kind of stuff. But I think that, you can probably help us. And so I'm all excited. You got me all goose pimply now. So
cool.
That's awesome. Well, listen, I just can't, again, can't thank you enough for being at my event and calling in today. I'm trying to put you in front of some other people because I think that your message needs to be heard. I think it comes from a practical place. And I think it resonates. It works perfectly. I mean, you're essentially a small business. You serve small business, and you understand that. And that's what our industry is. And it's a vibrant industry, but it needs some viewpoints like that. So I just, I'm really proud to have had you here, and I can't wait for our next lunch.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Mark. So we'll do it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you a shout. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and then I'll trying to think of when I'll be in town next, but I'll ping you, and we'll get together.
Sounds good, Mark. Take care.
All right, Mark. Thanks, brother. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Well, I would like to thank you all for listening to this episode of Brushstrokes. I can't thank Mark Montini enough. We had a little audio issue there, but other than that, he was as thoughtful as they come. As you can tell, he really has a passion for technology. He embraces the idea that it creates opportunity, and I concur. I think he is a fascinating dude and someone that we can all learn. So I'm looking forward to continuing conversations with him, and certainly continuing some conversations with all of you. Remember that this episode was sponsored by Conduit Incorporated, channeling content and connections for all your custom content needs. Go to conduit-inc.com. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned for the new episodes of Brushstrokes. Take care.